Sentence 8. Chapter 24, Pasuk Ches, the bottom of 440.
Where's Marty?
Don't put you up. Pay later. Okay. Story in the story up to now, basically, was for Zenget later. Moshe Rabbeinu was told by Hashem, go up to Har Sinai, or he was told by the Malach to go up to Har Sinai. Why are you closing the door?
It's a little noisy out there.
Okay, basically, Moshe Rabbeinu spoke, offered the Torah to the Jews. The Jews said, Nasa v'nishma, you know, we'll accept it, blind faith, and we'll also understand it. So then Moshe Rabbeinu made a covenant. He took half the blood, and he split it. So now we're on Pasuk Ches. V'yikach Moshe Sadam. Moshe Rabbeinu took the blood, and v'yizrik ala'am, and he sprinkled it on the people. V'yemen, he said, inidama bris, this is the blood of the covenant, asher koras Hashem imachem, that God made with you, al kol advonim ha'ela, and all these words. Meaning, this is the covenant that Hashem made, basically from the beginning of Chumash until this period of time, for everything that Hashem gave the Jewish people. The concept of a covenant, as we started discussing last week, is when you have a covenant, it means, like a friend make a covenant, marriage is a covenant, circumcision is a covenant. Basically, the concept of a covenant is that even when things aren't the way they should be, like friends, if you're friends, you don't need a covenant. Why do you make a covenant? In case you get into a fight, the covenant keeps you together, so to speak. So that was the whole concept of sprinkling the blood of these korbanos. That, so to speak, purified the Jewish people and made the blood covenant between Hashem and the Jewish people. Okay, now it says like this. V'yal Moshe v'Aaron, Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron went up. Nadav Avihu, Nadav and Avihu, the two older sons of Aaron, the Shivim Mizikna Yisrael, and the 70 elders of the Jewish people. So they went up to another level on Har Sinai. Vayiru Esalekei Yisrael, and they saw the God of Israel. And we'll soon see what this is supposed to mean. And basically, the simple meaning is they saw the God of Israel. Vesachas Raglav, and underneath his feet was Kamasi Livna Sasapir, like a brick made out of sapphire. And it was like the essence of the heaven in purity. Basically, what it means in unsimple English is that they saw an extremely great level of godliness. An extremely great level of godliness. Huh? No, Moshe, Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, and the 70 elders. Okay, they saw. Now, what's this concept of under his feet, and he saw a brick. It's a funny concept. He saw the whole brick. So, if you take the simple meaning, it says like this. It brings down the Medrash that when the Jews were in Egypt, God, so to speak, took a brick, and I'll explain to you why a brick, and he put it under his throne as a remembrance of the greatness of the Jewish people. Why? Because the Medrash says as follows. They used to make, especially after Moshe Rabbeinu complained to Pari, initially Pari used to give the Jews bricks. Then he said, I'm not giving you bricks anymore. You have to make your own bricks. So there's two things, and this is important for what we're going to discuss. There's Avonim stones, and there's bricks. The difference between Avonim and Levanim is stones are God-made. They're made from Hashem. People don't make stones. Bricks is things that Ma'aseh B'nei Adam that people make. So the Medrash tells a story. One day there was a pregnant woman, and when she was making the bricks, she miscarried into this mixture, and they took the kid and they stuck him into the cement, and the angel Gavriel came down and made a brick out of it and put it up, brought it up to God as if to God should have a reminder of the suffering of the Jewish people and the greatness of the Jewish people. And it said that brick stayed there until the Hashem destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, the Jews were no good, he threw it away, so to speak. So basically, it refers to a level of godliness that they saw, that the brick shining like a sapphire stone, meaning a great revelation of godliness. What does it mean underneath his feet? There's a pasuk we say, the Shabbos we're going to say, no, Shabbos not Rosh Chodesh, but in the Haftarah of Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, we say, Koyamar Hashem, Hashemayim Kisi, Hashem says, the heaven is my throne, V'ha'aretz Adem Ragloi, and the earth is a place where I put my feet on. Like when you sit on a chair, they have a thing, a footstool. So it says, Hashem said, the heaven is my throne, and the earth is where I put my feet on. Now obviously Hashem doesn't sit, and Hashem doesn't have a throne. He has a throne, but obviously it's not a Hashem sitting down on a throne like a king, so on and so forth. What is this concept of the Merkava? We're going to read in the Haftarah on Shavuos. The Navi Yecheskel saw God's throne, and he saw the animals around it, and there's God sitting on top of the throne. Obviously, again, God doesn't sit and God doesn't stand, and all these things are metaphoric. It's spiritual analogies of what godliness is. The throne of a king symbolizes the power and might of the king. Like the expression, it's the throne. The throne is nothing. The throne is a piece of gold or wood or whatever it's made out of. But the throne symbolizes the power of the king. But there's still a difference when a person stands or a person sits. When a person sits, they go down to a lower level than they are when they stand. Obviously. So when you speak about the concept of a throne, a chair of Hashem, it symbolizes God lowering himself to a certain level. Like for instance, in Kabbalah it says, in Chassidus it explains, that God's throne is in the world of Bria. And Atzilus is above God's throne. The throne is where God already lowers himself down to deal with the world. Because when the king is sitting on the throne, he's dealing with the nation. The king himself, when he's not on the throne, is not dealing with the nation, so to speak. When the king is sitting on the throne, the king is ruling the country. So when is Hashem lowering himself to deal with the world? When he's on the throne. But then you have a lower level, where he puts his feet. That's why the pasuk says, Hashemayim Kisi, that says, the heaven is my throne, where I sit. But Ha'aretz, the earth is even lower, that's where he puts the foot. So, metamorphically, it's speaking about levels of Kedusha that the Jewish people saw at this revelation of Har Sinai. They saw this sapphire brick, meaning the revelation of godliness. They saw underneath his feet look like this Livnas HaSapir, like the purity of the heaven, and so on and so forth. So this is the prophecy. In fact, the Rambam in Meir Nevuchim writes that all this that the Torah says they saw is not referring to literal seeing. It's speaking about a spiritual comprehension of godliness. In other words, it doesn't mean they literally saw, even though the pasuk says they saw godliness, but the Rambam Meir Nevuchim says it wasn't seeing physically, it was like when you understand something, you say, oh, I see. It was this intellectual vision of godliness that they saw. But what happened, we're soon going to see. V'latzilei b'nei Yisrael, but to the great men of the Jewish people, Leishalach Yod, God didn't punish them, I'll explain in a second. Vayachzu asalakim, they gazed upon God, Vayechlu vayishtu, and they ate and drank. The simple meaning of the pasuk, as Rashi explains it, and we'll get into a deeper meaning in a second, the simple meaning of the pasuk is, they saw this great revelation of godliness, and they rejoiced by eating and drinking. Okay? Like you rejoice with simcha, you make a party. You eat and you drink. That's the concept of a party. So the Medrash says they were all doomed by doing this. When you're seeing godliness, you don't go eat and drink. You don't go make you don't go party. If anything, it's more of a spiritual thing. So therefore, Rashi explains in the Medrash that Nadav and Avihu were supposed, Moshe and Aaron didn't do anything wrong. That's why he says, well, Atzilei b'nei Yisrael, to the great Jews, meaning Nadav and Avihu and the 70 elders. So Nadav and Avihu, and it says in the Medrash, God did not want to disturb the festivity of Matan Torah, that they received the Torah. So God said, you know what? I'm not punishing anybody now. That's what he says. L'shalach yodai. Hashem didn't send his hand to punish them, even though they deserved punishment. Because like I said, you don't sit down and enjoy godliness with a fat stomach. I mean, one second. So therefore, when did Hashem punish them? Nadav and Avihu, he punished, you know, when the first Rosh Chodesh Nisan, when they dedicated the Mishkan, Nadav and Avihu died. And the 70 elders, later on in Chumash, when the Jews complained, where's the beef? Mm-hmm. They wanted meat. So it says there were 70 elders, and Hashem punished them in a plague. So Hashem didn't want to disturb the festivities of Matan Torah by killing the people, even though they were God pronounced sentence upon them to die, but he waited until later. One second. That's the simple meaning of the pasuk where Rashi explains it in the Medrash. Other Mefarshim learn that Vayechlu Vayishtu does not mean physically eating and drinking. It means spiritual eating and drinking. Like you have many times, the Torah speaks in the terms about Torah learning and things like eating and drinking. Like David HaMelech says in Tillim, Teirascha b'seich me'oi, your Torah is in my stomach. That means he calls Torah basically food. It doesn't mean literally food. It means spiritual food that you digest of eating and drinking. So they learned that it was actually a spiritual eating and drinking. But the simple meaning of the pasuk is the Jews at this point sinned. These great people sinned by in looking at godliness. Number one, it says they shouldn't have looked where they looked. They shouldn't have been looking at such a great level of godliness, and especially not with eating and drinking. Yeah.
This doesn't make sense. Because Nadav and Avihu were killed for lack of being in the physical world, for not taking wives and not being physical. And now the Jews become physical. Maybe they were doing brachot, and they were eating in celebration of being with Hashem. And now they're brothers too, so you can't...
There's a time for everything. There's a time for everything. This is not the time, Chazal say, for them to go eat and drink and have a good time and so on and so forth.
What happened to the rabbi? Hashem punished them?
Yeah, Nadav and Avihu died later, and the Shivim Zkenim died later by the Mesaninim.
But wasn't Nadav and Avihu who was being punished because they went into...
That's what he asked. But the truth is, there is accumulation of various levels of sin that cause various things to happen until...
I thought you started at 8, so...
Oh, it's okay. Until, you know, until they finally were punished. It was an accumulation of sins. But over there was the same concept of what they did here too. Because Nadav and Avihu, why did they die? Because they brought a foreign fire. They had this longing for godliness.
Yes.
Okay? Now, there's another medrash over here that they bring down. That Nadav and Avihu did another thing wrong. What they did was, the medrash says, the Yalkut says, that Nadav and Avihu over here were walking behind Moshe and Aaron. And they said, we said, mention this, when is the old guy's going to die and we'll take over? Oops. The only question is, if there's a great tzaddikim, how can they wish that their father dies and they're going to take over? It makes sense in today's world. Not in
I see that whenever they do, they're always punished. They look at it, they're punished.
No, they
don't look, they're punished. They're not punished. It's punishment.
HaKadosh Baruch Hu medaktik.
How can someone be so...
HaKadosh Baruch Hu...
joyful?
Hello?
Rewarding?
HaKadosh Baruch Hu medaktik b'tzadikim k'chut asayra. When it comes to tzaddikim, they had plenty of their reward. Nadav and Avihu had a great revelations of godliness. They were very lofty people. They had this beauty of seeing godliness and so on. They were rewarded. The problem is, tzaddikim, because they're so great, the Gemara uses the expression, God is particular with tzaddikim, even like the hair, the width of a hair, k'chut asayda, like a thin hair. And to give you a marshal for this, we learned many times, if something's painting the house, and they're wearing dirty clothing, you're full of dirty clothing, and you get some lint on the garment, you don't notice it. When you're wearing something, you're going to a wedding, straight from the cleaners, you take something out, and there's a drop of lint on it, it becomes very noticeable. So the question, why on the dirty garment is it not noticeable, but on the clean garment it is? Because when the cleaner something is, the smaller the speck becomes noticeable. So by tzaddikim, because they're so great, and they're so holy, and so on and so forth, so every little thing they do, they're punished. But if you notice, Hashem didn't punish them here, Hashem waited, and they were part of even the Rosh Chodesh Nissan thing. They didn't die right away. But on their level, people have to know where they're able to go, where they're able to look, and what's not for them. And tzaddikim are supposed to know that.
But who are the 70 people that died?
The 70 elders that Moshe Rabbeinu picked.
Did they?
They're not alive today.
When? At the end of the journey or in the middle?
When they're slav, no? Parshat Baleischa. Before the Meraglim.
I'm sorry. Why did they go up to begin with? Because Hashem didn't ask them to go up.
Well, officially, they did go up.
They did, but I don't see here that
Hashem
asked them to come up.
It says in Pasuk
Aleph. In Pasuk Aleph, well, Pasuk Aleph, it says, "Vamesha Amalei Al Hashem, Ata Ara Nada Vavil Fishivim Skid Ziknei Yisrael." So in Pasuk Aleph, he did. Hashem told him to go up, all of them. Perchav Dal Pasuk Aleph. So there it says, "Vamesha Amar." Ali Al Hashem, Ata Arinod of Anavil Shivim Zikni Yisrael. Hashem told them to go up. But when they went up, they looked where they shouldn't be looking, and that was their Aveda. They went to a place they shouldn't have been going. Okay, Vayachzu Zolikim. Where?
No, this is
this was in the Mishkan where they died, not of Anavil.
It says that they went up. Then they came down. So by Yavam Moshe Yisabel La'an, it's called the Bnei Hashem.
Yeah, but
down again.
Yeah, but this Vayam Moshe is going back to Pasuk Aleph. Vayam Moshe is going back to Pasuk Aleph. When they went up, they went down, they went back up. But it was based on the first time that Hashem told them to go up. Okay, so they, in other words, they didn't actually behave the way they should have behaved, but because of this. Because of this, though, we do see there's a concept of simcha. When the Eibishter, when like it says, simcha steira, you have to rejoice by physically being happy, because in order to enjoy spirituality, you have to be healthy, so to speak. And that's why even a yom tif, which is really a spiritual time, the mitzvah is to eat. Because when the body is happy, so then the neshama could be happy. Except they had to know it was done in the wrong way. So to speak, they should.
They knew about it.
They knew? If they didn't know, they wouldn't have been punished.
What did they do that was so wrong? I mean, the 70 elders.
They looked where they shouldn't in godliness. That was their sin.
They couldn't do tshuva.
They didn't do tshuva. They could have possibly done tshuva, but they didn't. And the proof of it is that Nadav and Avihu did the same thing again. Later on, Nadav and Avihu brought this foreign fire to become close to God that they shouldn't have brought.
Were they aware of the
barrel
that they
had?
That's what I asked.
Yeah,
so
yeah. You don't punish if you don't warn.
Yeah, but he didn't.
You're not punished if you're not warned. That's the rule. You can't punish a kid for doing something if you never told him you can't do it.
So you said they knew that they shouldn't drink and eat, and they knew they shouldn't.
And they did it anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay. In Chassidus it explains, in fact, about this pasuk, about the avonim and the levonim, the lebricks and the stones. Stones refer to the learning, and bricks refer to the aveda of davening. Because Torah, you're learning God's wisdom, so it's God's, what God made, coming down to you. But bricks is man made, with that is the concept of davening. The concept of davening is the avodah of the person to better themselves, to become closer to God. That's the concept of levanim and avonim in the avodah of the Jew. Because earlier on in Shmos, it says, what did they, the vayavidos bnei Yisrael befarach? Okay, what did they do? Bavodah kosher, b'chomer, b'levanim, b'vuchal avodah basada. So all those types of things refer to the avodah that a Jew has to do in the time of Golos. There has to be brick aveda, which is davening. There has to be stone aveda, which is learning. And all those various chol aveda basada means the mitzvahs to do with the worldly things. All these things have to be done in a proper way. Okay, so pasuk yud beis. V'yem Hashem al Meisha. Now Hashem said to Meisha, I lay Eli ha'ada, I want you to come up alone to the mountain. V'yei sham, and you should be there. V'atna l'chos luchis ha'evin, and I should give you the luchis ha'evin, the stone of the tablets of stone, va'teira v'hamitzvah, and the teira and the mitzvah, asher kasafti l'hireisam, that I wrote to teach the Jewish people. Now, even though the tablets had only the Aser Sadibris, the Ten Commandments, and yet it says in the Pasuk that Hashem said, the Luchas Ha'evan, Teira Mitzvah that I wrote to teach. So what did the tablets have? So the Mefarshim explained, if Hadrashi says it, that all the 613 mitzvahs are included in the Ten Commandments. Because like we learned, Shavuos Nights many times, that there are 620 letters in the Ten Commandments. If you start from Anechi Hashem Elokecha, the Aleph of Anechi, until Chol Asher L'Reyecha, which is the last words of the Ten Commandments, there are 620 letters. The 620 letters correspond with the 613 biblical mitzvahs and the 7 rabbinic mitzvahs. Because we know, in addition to the 613, the Chachamim gave us 7 mitzvahs, which altogether equals 620, which is the numerical value of the word keser, crown, keser teira, chav tof resh is 620. So, the Mefarshim, in fact, the Rapsad Yigoin, Rashi quotes from the Hazaris of Rapsad Yigoin, the Rapsad Yigoin in his book shows the way which mitzvahs of the teira are connected to which one of the Ten Commandments. So basically, even though Hashem gave only the Ten Commandments and the Luchis, but nevertheless, he writes the whole Torah mitzvahs included in the Ten Commandments. Number one, by the fact that there's 620 letters, and by the fact that each mitzvah of 613 is connected to one of the 10 of the Aser Sadibris. So even the Luchis had the whole thing, everything that was going to be Shekasafti that he says, which he's going to write for all future generations. Okay, so he says like this, V'yakam Meshav Yeshua Mesharsei. So now Meshav Rabbeinu got up with Yeshua's servant, V'yal Meshav Ralo Elikim, and Meshav Rabbeinu went up to the mountain of God, meaning he went up to Har Sinai. V'laskeinim Amar, and to the elders he said, Shvulana Bazeh, you guys return. Now you're not supposed to stay here. The only one to stay by the mountain, as we see later in Kisisa, was Yeshua. Yeshua camped at the foot of the mountain for the 40 days that Meshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai. But the elders, and he didn't say it to Yeshua, he said it to the elders, he said, Shvulana Bazeh, go back, Adeshenoshev Aleichem until we return to you. And he says, V'hinei Aaron v'chur imachem, Aaron and Chur are with you, meaning me, Baldvarim, anybody who has any questions, Yigash Shalem could go to Aaron and Chur. Chur was the son of Miriam. Kalev ben Yefuna was the husband of Miriam. Kalev ben Yefuna was Meshe Rabbeinu's brother-in-law. Kalev and Miriam was Meshe's sister, as we learned. So Kalev and Miriam had a son by the name of Chur. Okay? So Meshe Rabbeinu said to them, in case you have any problems, you can go ask Aaron and Chur, they'll be able to help you out, but you guys check out. Meshe Rabbeinu went up himself. Yeshua went up to be, not on the mountain, he didn't go up, but he wanted to stay with Meshe Rabbeinu.
This takes place a day after Matan Torah? Or when is this taking place, really?
Oy, Nechluku Rabbeinu. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says this was after Aser Sadibris. Some people say it was before.
But even after, when after? The next day?
The next day. Because simply learning the Chumash the way most people learn it, when did Meshe Rabbeinu go up for 40 days and 40 nights? The next day. The Torah was given on the 6th of Sivan. 7th of Sivan in the morning, Meshe Rabbeinu went up. for 40 days and 40 nights. He came down Shivasa B'Tammuz. The Jews miscalculated the 40 days, and that's when they made the Egel. So Meshe Rabbeinu, the simple meaning of this is that, because some people say he went up to the heaven and came down and then gave the Torah and then he went back up. There's a lot of different opinions when all these psukim are happening, before Matan Torah, after Matan Torah. But the simple way of learning the Pasuk is after Matan Torah all this happened.
Why is Torah is not in chronological order?
There is a rule, Ein Mukdam Ma'ukhar B'Torah. There is no chronological, necessarily. There's no necessarily chronological order in Torah. Why the Torah does like that, I don't know. I mean, obviously God does it for a reason. But the most times they don't even say why, they just say, the fact is that Ein Mukdam Ma'ukhar B'Torah. Okay, Vayal Meshe Lahar, Meshe Beinu went up to the mountain, Vayichas Ha'onen Asa'ar, the cloud came down and covered the entire mountain. You can open the doors? Yeah, it'd be a good idea. Open both doors. You have to pull the string on top. Not to say. So Meshe Rabbeinu went up to the mountain. Yeah, there's a lot of mysteries in these stories. It's very unclear, even in the Midrashim, there's a lot of arguments and different opinions, because the Torah is not clear. Because Matan Torah happened in Yisrael. All of a sudden the Torah goes and discusses, not at the end of Mishpatim, the Torah goes back to Matan Torah. What?
No, I think I heard that the Torah was written chronologically, so it would show it was not like a history book. It's a teaching.
That could be an explanation. But why only in certain places that the Torah do it, not by other places?
No, by other places.
Mixture.
It's not completely like that. Because
I understand, but why by this concept does the Torah put it not chronological order by other things? Yes. That's what I'm saying. So the whole thing is, listen.
Maybe when it comes to receiving the Torah.
Torah wants to be, keep us in suspense.
When it comes to things like receiving the Torah, because Hashem doesn't want, we're always receiving it, so time doesn't take place.
There was a certain guy used to, it was one of the Rebbe's secretaries, many years ago. So he says, he was a joker, he was a let. He used to make the Rebbe laugh. He used to go into the Rebbe for dictation. So, one time, he used to do crazy things just to make the Rebbe laugh. One time he went into the Rebbe with a pencil this size, a tiny pencil. So the Rebbe asked him, "You don't have anything bigger?" So he took out a real big pencil from his pocket, those real big bombers on it. So this guy said to the chassidim, "I hung around the Rebbe so much, I thought I caught on already how to be a Rebbe." No, he said it was a joke, and then he said, and all of a sudden the Rebbe would do something and knock me off my feet, Torah keeps us in suspense that we shouldn't know. We shouldn't think we understand it. So there's always things that we don't understand. In Sfarim is brought down, there will always be an illness in the world that has no remedy to it. I'm not saying my own things. Shlema Melech wrote a Sefer Refuah. The Gemara says, it's a famous medrash. Shlema Melech wrote a book with the healing for every possible illness.
Where's that book?
Yecheskel buried the book. Okay? Yecheskel buried the book. And one of the reasons he buried it, because if people have the remedy for all illnesses, they would think they're God. And like this, God always makes in life things that we have to admit.
Equation.
We have to admit that we don't know. That's his boss. Therefore, even in science, there will always be things that scientists will agree. Even the atheists, even the egotistic ones, they will always be forced to agree that certain things they don't understand. Mm-hmm. Medical science, whatever it is. Why? Hashem doesn't want people to be able to understand everything. Because then they think they're God.
You won't
daven. It says, one of the reasons he buried, Yechezkel buried the book, Gonzai, why he hid it and buried it, because people would stop davening, and they would do a lot of things. But
Onkelos and Rambam, they don't agree with you.
They don't.
No.
How about you?
Baruch Hashem.
They're joyful, eating and drinking favorably. They joy upon seeing the vision was as great as they have been enjoying the utmost physical pleasure.
Yeah, according to Onkelos and Rambam, they did not sin.
And to prevent the reaction of their vision, they ate the flesh of offering and drank in grateful celebration of the great spiritual privilege God had awarded them. According to Onkelos and Rambam, they did not sin.
Yeah. And according to Rashi says they did sin. And I just told you what Rashi says.
Why didn't you tell me Onkelos and Rambam? I would feel better.
I said that there are other opinions that said, you didn't hear. I said there are other opinions that say that it wasn't physical eating and drinking here.
No, this is physical.
I understand. But they learn that it was something good, that there was festivities. And Rashi quotes in the Medrash that it wasn't good because they were interested in their stomachs rather than in the level of godliness. Okay? But even according to Rashi, we still, according to Halacha, we still celebrate spiritual things with physical food. Because it has to permeate the physical body also. Okay, so Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the mountain. And the mountain covered, the cloud covered the entire mountain. The glory of God rested on Mount Sinai. And this is also a question. Is this part of the 40 days, before the 40 days? But simply it's within the 40 days. That for the first 6 days, the cloud covered the entire mountain. And God called Moshe Rabbeinu on the seventh day in the cloud. Meaning, the way the simple meaning of the pasuk is, Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the mountain. For 6 days, the cloud covered the entire mountain. Then, on the seventh day, Hashem called Moshe Rabbeinu to go into the mountain. Into the cloud. And the Medrash says, when he went, the cloud came, and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know what to do, and then the cloud opened his mouth, and Moshe went in there, and it flew up into the sky, and 12,000 black angels came and started making problems to Moshe, what are you doing here? And Moshe Rabbeinu said, God called me here, and then they became friendly to him, and this is when he went up, so to speak, to the mountain. Umari Kreid Hashem, in the vision of the glory of God, was a burning fire on the top of the mountain. By the way, Rashi learns that according to one opinion, the cloud covered the mountain before Matan Torah.
Six days of Sivan.
Other people say it happened later. So this is the whole controversy. Did this happen before? Did it happen after? But he went up, and he called him. See, and Rashi says the second opinion is that the cloud covered the mountain after Matan Torah. So there's a whole controversy if the 6 days that the cloud covered the mountain was that part of the 40 days or before the 40 days, whatever the story was, the different opinions. Vayavin Meshe B'secha Anan, Meshe Benu came into the cloud. Vayala Lahari went up to the mountain. Now it says that Hashem made, Rashi says it was like smoke within the cloud. God made for Moshe Rabbeinu a path within the cloud to go straight up to the Shemayim. Moshe Rabbeinu was in the mountain, 40 days and 40 nights. Now, the Mefarshim explained, what's this not concept of 40 days and 40 nights? And later on, in Chumash, Moshe Rabbeinu says, he didn't eat for 40 days and 40 nights. So what actually happened? What is this concept of 40 days and 40 nights? So some of Farshim learn that it corresponds, the Gemara says it takes 40 days from conception until the fetus is formed. So Moshe Rabbeinu needed to purify himself to such an extent that he became spiritual. Because the Mefarshim ask a very big question. You can't survive 40 days and 40 nights without food. Okay. Miracles are here, miracles are here. Yeah, God did a miracle. God could do whatever he wants. So there's an interesting Gemara. The Gemara asks the question, the angels came down to earth by Avraham Avinu, the three angels, so they ate. Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the mountain, to angel land, he didn't eat. So the Gemara says the expression, which became a Gaish expression also, asis lakarta azal b'ni Musa. Simply it means, when you come to a city, do according to the customs of the city. Mm-hmm. And the Goyim say, when in Rome, do as the Romans. So the Medrash explains that when the Malachim, even though Malachim don't eat, but they come down to earth where you eat, so they ate. Moshe Rabbeinu normally eats, he went up to Har Sinai.
He's starving.
No, he didn't eat. Over there, they don't eat, he didn't eat. So there's different explanations of this concept. How did Moshe Rabbeinu exist? So some Mefarshim say that his body actually became refined like an angel for those 40 days. So he didn't need to eat.
Either that or... And Eric is 40 days and 40 nights, but in space, it could be a minute.
Nah, he wasn't there. He was there for 40 days and 40 nights.
He went up.
Yeah, but he went up for 40 days and 40 nights. The Torah's... No, but the pearl, even then, it was stuck at the 40 days and 40 nights. Because the Mefarshim explain that he wanted to refine himself the 40 days it takes to formulate the fetus from conception until it becomes Yetziras HaVlad. Until it becomes formed is 40 days, you know, and that he wanted to do. And another thing it says that when Mashiach comes after Tchias HaMeisim, it says, Ein Be'le Achila V'le Shtia. Eventually, when Mashiach comes after Tchias HaMeisim, we're not going to eat and drink. It says, even those that, with the opinions that say God is going to make a meal, the Shlev Yosan and the Sherabad and all the meals that God's going to make for the Tzaddikim, it's not eating to keep the Neshama in the body, it's going to be a different type of eating completely. So there is a level of godliness that you don't need to eat or drink. And that's what happened when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the Har Sinai. But they say another interesting part, the Megala Mukah says that the 40 days and 40 nights represents the mikveh. A mikveh has 40 sa. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing, the Megala Mukah says, 40 sa.
40 what?
Sa. It's a measurement, a sa. Now, how many lug? Lug is a measurement in Torah. How many lug is in 40 sa? 960. That's the halacha. How many? If you want to know what a lug is, you know when you say you drink at a vias of wine. A Kiddush cup is a Revius. Revius is a quarter. Why is a Kiddush cup called a Revius? Because the minimum amount for a Kiddush cup is a quarter of a lug. So it's called a Revius. You know, it's called a Revius. It's a quarter of a lug. So there's 960 lugim. So you figure out a Revius, let's say, is 3 ounces, roughly. So a lug is like 12 ounces. Okay? So if you get 960 times 12 ounces, that's how many gallons are in a mikveh. But the Megala Mukah says another interesting thing. How many hours is in 40 days? 960. 40 times 24 is 960. So the 40 days that Moshe Rabbeinu was in Har Sinai, he explains the whole concept of the mikveh, the purification of the mikveh. And therefore, there's 960 lugim in a mikveh, and there's 960 hours in 40 days. And he says, what did he go up to Har Sinai for? Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai for Hashem to explain to him the entire oral Torah. Now, even though Hashem was a great teacher, and he was a great student, but the truth of the matter is, the Medrash says later on the Pasuk, when Moshe Rabbeinu came down with the Luchas, Vayitein al Moshe kechaleisi ledavid itei, he gave him the Luchas when he finished speaking to him. It says, chaleisi without a vav, meaning like a kala. But it says, even Moshe Rabbeinu, with all his greatness, when he came back down to earth, he forgot. And Hashem had to give it to him as a gift. So even though the 40 days and 40 nights had a great teacher, Hashem, and a great student, Moshe Rabbeinu, nevertheless, it was still only the generalizations of the Torah, the klal. But every detail that exists in all ages, from the beginning of time to the end of time, in Torah, are all included in the klalim, in the general rules that Moshe Rabbeinu got. We've mentioned a number of times a famous, strange story in the Gemara Menachos. In the Gemara Menachos is a story that Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, can you show me the Torah learning of later generations? So Hashem said, no problem. He took him into Rabbi Kiva's classroom. And the Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu sat in the back of the room. And he was listening to Rabbi Kiva teach Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to hear how they're going to learn Torah in the later generations. So Rabbi Kiva was teaching. And Rabbi Kiva said something Moshe Rabbeinu never knew. And the Gemara says he was upset. Rabbi Kiva knows something that he didn't know, and he gave the Torah. So all of a sudden, a student said to Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi, where do you know this from? And Rabbi Kiva said, Halacha l'Moshe m'Sinai. It was given to Moshe at Sinai. So the Gemara says, when Moshe Rabbeinu heard that, he felt better. That's the story in the Gemara. Now, obviously, you're not playing here with two-year-olds or people that have egos. And Rabbi Kiva was a tzaddik. Okay? He didn't hear something. He heard something he didn't know. He gets upset. All of a sudden, he hears his name mentioned. By the way, Moshe. All of a sudden, he feels good. You know, what's going on over here? So, what the Eibishter actually showed Moshe Rabbeinu, that in the 40 days, in 40 nights, Moshe Rabbeinu got every possible generalization of Torah. How you take details from the klal, from the general rule, that every person has their own personal ability to learn Torah, to teach Torah, to spread in Torah, to expound on Torah, if it's within the guidelines of the klal. Now Rabbi Kiva said a detail that Moshe Rabbeinu on his own didn't know from the klal. He didn't know from the general rule. So he was upset. Maybe there's something that he didn't know in the klal, in the general rule. When Rabbi Kiva said to the student, Halacha Moshe m'Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu felt better because he understood that it's all part of the general rule. I'll give you an example. You have commentaries in Rashi. Commentaries on Rashi. Let's say you have 20 commentaries on Rashi. And each one learns Rashi a different way. Yeah? Number one, did Rashi think about all that these guys are saying? Did Rashi really think what each one is saying? And by the way, you could learn, they learn opposite ways in Rashi. Like, I'll give you an example. This passage we just said, right? Rashi calls in the Medrash, they sin by eating. Unklis and Ramban say they didn't sin. I mean, so like, which one is it? Did they or didn't they? Or there's a klal in Torah about a certain thing. So the question is, you have 20 commentaries in Rashi, and all of them are Torah, all of them are holy, so which one's right? How does it work? So the explanation is, you find a similar thing in Chumash. You can have, by the way, Lahavdu, you have this in today's world also. You have in the music world, you can have Beethoven. And then you have all these side guys coming, or Shakespeare, you know, and all these commentaries on Shakespeare, commentaries. Shakespeare never dreamt about it, Bechal. Or Beethoven never. So how does it work? It works like this, in Torah. The analogy of it is from the beginning of Chumash. At the beginning of Chumash, the Torah says, before the flood, the people were corrupt. So Hashem says, I'm going to destroy the world. Why am I going to destroy the world? Because the person is born bad. They're bad, they're evil, they're no good, they're corrupt. Hashem says, I'm going to destroy the world. What happened after the Mabul? Noach brought a sacrifice when he got out. It says in the pasuk like this, Vayorach Hashem esreach anichayach. Hashem smelled the good smell of the carbon. And Hashem said the following, Le'esiv eid l'kalel esodama. I'm not going to destroy the world anymore. Why? Why won't I destroy a person when they're bad? Ki yetzel lev ha'adam ra menorav. Because the person's born bad, so it's not their fault when they do bad.
Well, didn't he know that before?
1 second. The same logic that God used to destroy the people. They're bad. Destroy them. The same logic after the flood, God used to say, let's not destroy them. because they're bad. It's not their fault. So what's the story? You have one logic. There's one logic. One rule. One klal. One klal is, one rule is, a person is born bad. You can analyze this rule in a million different ways. Detailing it, you can say one detail from the rule is, well, if they're born bad, let's get rid of them. Another rule will be, it's not their fault, let's not destroy them. Right? These are all the various different ways of taking a rule and digesting and detailing it in all various different ways. You could take any aspect in Torah. So what happened? And Moshe Rabbeinu is 40 days and 40 nights. What Moshe Rabbeinu got was the general rules of Torah. How each one, and this explains, by the way, a contradictory Gemara. One Gemara says, and not a contradictory, it's a contradictory statement in the Gemara. The Gemara says like this, Kol ma she-talmid vasik osid l'chadish, kvar nitna l'Moshe m'Sinai. The Gemara says like this, anything that a competent Torah scholar will make new, mechadish, a chiddush, was already given to Moshe at Sinai. That's a contradiction of terms. If it's new, it wasn't already given. If it was already given, how could it be new? And the Gemara says that anything that a Talmud Vasek, a competent student, will be mechadish, chiddush, new, was already given. How could it be already given if it's new? And if it's already given, how could it be new? The explanation is it's what we just explained. What happened was God gave all the rules. What the Talmud is being mechadish, what is the student knowing, which is incorrect English, what is he making new? The application from the rule into a detail.
Chiddush.
That's the chiddush. But the truth is, it's all part of the original rule.
Mm-hmm. So the same thing that every year we read Parsha Noah or other Parsha, every year the rabbis, they come with a different things, it's like you never heard about it.
Yeah, the rabbis make up things that even God doesn't know. That's what they're paid to do, by the way. No, but the point is, it was already given, meaning the concept was given. Okay? But the way it was revealed from the rule, from the general to the detail, that is the chiddush. And that's what happened to Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva said a detail that was never said before. So Moshe Rabbeinu Taka didn't know that detail because it wasn't said yet.
The story of Moshe was listening.
The Gemara says.
It says the story of Moshe Rabbeinu says, I never heard that story.
Yeah. It says in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Rabbi Kiva said something that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know. Niskakim upon of Shemeshi, his face dropped, he was upset. And then a student asked him, Rabbi, Minolach Zeh, like whatever, where do you know this from? And he said, Allah Moshe Messina. Impressed.
Stunned.
Okay.
I do.
No, but that's the, and that's what Moshe Rabbeinu learned 40 days and 40 nights in the mountain. Which Bechal is in itself a big thing. Because Torah is so unlimited, there's really an unlimited amount of rules. So the fact that even in 40 days and 40 nights, so you can imagine the generalization of the generalities, whatever the word is, that he had on Har Sinai was an extreme general, that infinite amount of details came from this.
So what you're saying basically...
Oh, how cute.
No.
So what you're saying is basically that it's like a person does Shabbat. We're all doing Shabbat, but we all have our flavor, we're eating certain things, we're singing certain songs, so we gave us the creativity in everybody, basically.
Every Jew, we say in davening, Yirat Mevlar She Yibana Beis HaMikdash B'mher V'yameinu V'sein Chalkeinu. What does that mean? Give us our part. What do you mean our part? My part. What does my part in Torah mean?
Yeah.
Every Jew has their own unique thing in Torah that they can reveal, that nobody else can reveal. But even though you revealed it, it was already given to Moshe at Sinai. You see this in the medical world, okay, in the halachic medical world, okay? Obviously, all the technology that the Torah talks about, I mean, that science has, medical science or scientific science or technological science, whatever, the Torah doesn't talk about. Torah doesn't talk about heart transplants. Torah doesn't talk about computers. Torah doesn't talk about internet. Torah doesn't talk about all these things, right? So now the question is, are you allowed to do it or not? Where do you find in Torah these concepts? You will never find anywhere heart transplants in Torah. Okay? You're never going to find internet in Torah. But when the Gemara gives guidelines of what you're allowed to do or what you're not allowed to do, so then you can apply it to the halacha that exists. Now, therefore, when Torah says, let's say, you can't use the internet on Shabbos, let's say, for whatever, yeah? Basically, God said you can't use the internet on Shabbos. There's no internet mentioned in halacha, in Gemara, or in Shulchan Aruch. The answer is, from the guideline, from the general rules of what Torah gave about Shabbos, you can know if you, for instance, if electricity is fire, the Torah says you can't create fire. If electricity is closing a circuit, so the Torah says you can't create, you can't build on Shabbos. You understand? So it's not that the Torah talks about the detail, but from the general rule that you can't build on Shabbos, you can't make a fire on Shabbos. Or if the Torah tells us what the definition of death is, based on that definition of death, you can know if you can do a heart transplant or not. Are you killing the donor or you're not killing the donor? So therefore, let's say the Torah says you can't take a heart out of a patient because you're killing the patient, let's say, okay? So the general rule of Torah, that death is, let's say, respiratory death, let's say. And therefore, the heart has to be removed before the person dies respiratory, just brain death, but they're still alive respiratory. But the Torah says that's not death yet. So based on that, God in Chumash says, or whatever it is, that you cannot take a heart from a person like that. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu learned in Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights. But even that, 40 days and 40 nights, how much could have you learned if Torah is so infinite?
What about the 40 years following?
40 years following, as mitzvahs were given, Moshe Rabbeinu was told by Hashem another mitzvah. He wrote it down, and that was what went on for the 40 years in the Midbar. Until right before he died, he wrote, finished up the Sefer Torah, and then that's it.
Is it for us to learn that we can go above and beyond the chidushim of what Moshe...
A Jew has to. If it's within the guidelines of how to interpret Torah. We say it. Rabbi Shmuel Eimer, b'shleish esrei midays atayra nidreshes. Torah could be derived in 13 ways. Another brayser says 24 ways. Okay, but there has to be the guidelines of Torah how to interpret the book. If a guy will interpret the book and say, "Well, these laws don't apply today because they're only good in the desert," you know, but today it doesn't apply. That's not one of the 13 ways the Torah says you could learn. Right. So if the Torah gives the instructions of how to use the book. If you follow the instructions, you know, it's like an instruction book, how to put something together. You buy something in the store, and you have to put it together, you have an instruction book. You follow the instructions, you're going to put it together. You don't follow the instructions, you're not going to put it together.
Well, maybe yes.
Only Jews think I can know better than the instructions. I don't need the instructions.
But it is a way.
But it's wrong.
It's the wrong way.